What's up, fellow humans? Welcome to another episode of For the Love Of, a podcast where I do a deep dive into what other people love and are passionate about. My name is Steven, and today I've got with me Jerome Schuler. Now, Jerome is a musician, he's a filmmaker, he's an actor and a writer, and he's coming here to just chop it up about what he loves, his art, his passion, his music. So without further ado, Jerome, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining me.
What's going on, Steven? For the love of... We out here. That's what's going on.
We doing it, buddy. We're doing it.
How you feeling, brother?
I'm feeling good, man. And I've actually been wanting to get you on the podcast for a while. And I haven't reached out about it yet, but I've been constantly thinking, I need to get Jerome on. So I'm really glad that when I just offered it up, like late on a Wednesday night, I was like, hey man, do you want to hop on? You were like, yes, let's book it. So I appreciate you, man.
I'm so happy you asked. I'm excited to be on your show, dude.
That's cool. And I know that you're excited about it because you're a pretty passionate dude and you love spreading the stuff that you make. You make a lot of really cool stuff. So I know that you're ready to share that with people.
Hell yeah, dude. And I love that you have the platform to do that. And you're creating a platform for artists to do that. And I know you've talked about your podcast before when we worked together. So I'm happy to see you actually doing it, brother. And congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. It's been a ride, man. I am proud of what I've done and what this has built. And I'm just really proud to see how it grows. And the thing that makes it so special is the people that I have on. I've had on some really great conversations, really great, knowledgeable, really like very bright people. And I've been blessed. So you're don't let us down. Don't let us down.
Let's do it.
Oh, yeah, dude. So I listened to some of your earlier work. Now, for those who don't know, you actually create a lot of music. You're pretty prolific, man. I did not realize how many albums you have. How many do you have?
I think on available on platforms, maybe 10, maybe about 10. That's on platform. I have so many unreleased songs that I've put out and then taken back that only if you followed me back then that you would have. So I think maybe 10 right now, three under Molly and the Pineapples, anywhere between 7 and 10, maybe more under Jay Shore.
Look, after like two or three, you start to lose count. That's a good sign. Man. That's a lot of music. So how would you describe your genre? Like, what do you go for when you're making music?
I just go for however I feel, man. I used to hate being put in a box because I used to feel like being young and black doing music, it's like automatically you rap. My singing voice isn't the traditional black singing voice, soulful voice. So people would be like, you know, if I'm singing, they call it hip hop. If I was rapping, they call it sing. It was just really weird. And from an early age, I just hated being put in a box. So I just do whatever I feel. And now, thankfully, there's so many subgenres that I probably could figure out a genre, but I just do my thing, man, or whatever, wherever it falls, it falls.
Yeah, that's good. I also hate being put in a box. And I realize that that's something that people tend to do with artists, especially musical artists, because they're like, oh, you sound like this other band that I know. So you must be alternative, or you must be rock or whatever. But you've got a unique flavor to your music, man. It's not quite hip hop, not quite sort of electronic, in a way, but it's very, I was telling Amanda earlier tonight, it's almost like storytelling in a way, and how it feels. It feels like you're moving us through these albums. I don't know. It's a different kind of vibe, man. It's really cool.
I appreciate that, dude, but could you put a name, a genre on it if you had to?
Nope. That's why I asked you, because I don't even know. So
it's such a weird space to live in, not knowing what your genre is, but just being like, it's hard. It makes it hard for me to get placement on like Spotify playlists and, you know, shit like that, but it's just what I create. I mean, sometimes when I feel that way, I go back and listen to like Michael Jackson or Prince. I'm not trying to compare myself to them, but when you listen to like old school Michael or Prince, you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, at one point someone was like, that's not gonna work. That doesn't sound like anything. And now they're considered great. You can go further back in music, just the Beatles or fucking why can't I think of his name? Bob Dylan. That voice, that sound. Someone probably said Bob Dylan. No.
Anything new or like innovative or anything that feels different than mainstream at the time will usually get a little bit of kickback.
Yeah.
It's interesting you brought up Michael, because I was going to make an assumption based off of just what I've been listening to, some of your inspirations, because there's some of your early work I feel like is very much inspired by Kanye and by Michael Jackson. It's not a copy, but it's like, oh, that's his flavor, and you can tell he's inspired.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I always approach songs with, what would Kanye do? What would Michael Jackson do? And what would Tupac do?
yeah. Okay, that's the third one. That's the third one that pieces it all together. You mean you can't go wrong with those, man. Like, if they did it, just make your own flavor of what they did.
That's just the beginning process, though. But then, like, if it's like harmonies and music, I think a lot about like Phil Collins or Brandy or Stevie Wonder. There's so many different influences to pull from, just from my childhood, having so much music in my life. It's been it's just all across the board. I listen to everything. So
thank you for you're bringing up like your own segues here, man, because I've already got like some questions I want to ask you. So talking about your childhood for a second, not necessarily that far back, but I have kind of a twofer question for you, like kind of two questions in one. So at what point can you remember did you know I have to be an artist? And second question, when from that moment, like how long between the moment of realization and actually putting some effort in and really trying to make it? Like, can you explain like maybe what that process felt like? Because I want people to be inspired by artists. I want people to see you have 10 fucking albums, dude. Like, you started somewhere. That's inspirational for somebody. But it's like, sometimes you think about the steps from A to Z and you think that's too large of a step. So maybe like, what is A to B and what does B to C look like? So like, how did knowing and chasing being an artist, like what was that like for you?
So the earliest I can remember me singing, I used to go down to South Carolina. I'm from Jersey City, born and raised. So a lot of my family lives in the South. So the earliest memory I have of me singing was in a church that my grandmother was a pastor at. And that's the first memory I have of singing. And I remember my sister said that I caught the Holy Ghost, which I don't have any recollection of. But I know from then I started writing when I was a kid. That's how like it all started. But then watching Eddie Murphy on television, like, so because I act and I sing. So at least that's how I look at it. So it's like, that's where the foundation of everything is, watching Eddie Murphy on television and watching Michael Jackson do these like movie music videos. That's what I grew up on. So, and my sisters, they also could sing. So I have two older sisters. So when I was in kindergarten, I think one sister was like in middle school and the other was about to graduate. So my middle sister, she would always put me in talent shows with her and her friends, or she'll get all the kids in the neighborhood and put them in a dance routine. And that's the first taste of the stage I got, and being on stage and being able to be free like that and seeing the reaction from the audience, I was immediately hooked. But I was also a really shy kid. I didn't sing if anyone else was in the house. I kept my writings very private and to myself. I would get on stage because I took to acting because at least I can get on stage and I can act. I can do the words. I might get nervous, but I can do the words. But when I would sing, it was coming from such a personal and vulnerable place. I didn't know how to share that exactly when I was a younger kid. So I got into a visual performing arts program when I was in high school. And in my home high school, I had to audition for Grease. In order to audition, I had to sing. And I sung Edwin McCain, I'll Be. And a lot of my friends knew that I was writing and knew that I could sing, but because they had never heard me sing, they weren't quite sure if I could sing. And when I sung the song, they're like, dude, you could sing this whole time. Like,
well, you're holding out on us, man.
And but even then, my freshman year, I got the part in Grease. I was Roger. He's not in the movie, only in the play. But even then, I remember how scared I was. But then next year, I got the lead in Pippen, and I'd still start breaking it down a little bit, but I still was a nervous wreck. I was in choir all through high school, so that's where I really start getting the confidence to sing. And then I think my sophomore year, I started doing we would have multicultural events that were like talent shows, and I would sing a lot there, and I was still writing, but I would always hear music in my head, but I just didn't have access to a band or anything like that. So I was still writing, and when I got to college, my girlfriend at the time brought me a keyboard so I can start playing. And then I had this terrible setup where it was like an 8-track recorder, my my computer and my keyboard, and I would like play on the keyboard and I'll go into the 8 tracks, and then I'll bring it into the computer and never try to record my vocals over that. It's terrible. And then a childhood friend of mine lived in Atlanta. He was like, well, come out to Atlanta, I have this program called Reason, you'll be able to do all of the things you're talking about. And growing up like in 8th grade, I loved Linkin Park, and I knew that they used this program Reason. So I'm like, if Linkin Park is using it, hell yeah. He paid for half of my flight to come during a spring break. He was working during spring break, but he left me in his house where he had a home studio. I recorded a complete album in that 1 week that I was there, like 14 wow. songs, wrote, produced all. It was the first, imagine all these years you having all of this stuff built up in you, and then you finally have the tools to do it. It was like
sploosh, man.
Oh my God. It was like a park for a almost grown kid. So I'm doing my BFA in concentration in acting, BFA in theater. And at the same time, whenever I'm not in class or doing plays or rehearsals, I'm just making music in my dorm room. And finally, I start taking it seriously going into my senior year, and we start looking for like management. And then I decided that I wanted to do artist development. So my last senior year of college, I was in artist development while I was getting my BFA. And then shortly after that, when I graduated that summer, I signed to an indie label that was based in Hoboken. That was my first taste of the business side. Not really the first taste, because artist development, I got a little bit of taste of the business side. And that's when I start to hate it a little bit. It's one thing that's funny about what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying that the fact that you even were admitting that you hated something about the process, it's like, okay. And probably education-wise, it's not real world, so that might have been why you were kind of, but I just thought it was interesting you said that, so that's why I reacted that way.
No worries, it's also the politics of everything. No matter where you go, you find out that there's politics and things, and as you get older, you start to realize certain things. Like some of my professors were just in it for their egos and didn't have anything to do with the students. I was like the BFA representative in my my class, and I just remember the bickering that would go on amongst the professors about like casting and stuff. And I'm like, you realize this is about kids trying to find their way. When I left school, I had a bad taste for acting. Like it took me a lot of time to get my love of acting back. But then the same thing started happening. And once I started to experience the business side of music, you would think that having so many talents would get you in a lot of doors. But what it does is, unfortunately, how people are looking at it, it's a money business. So what they're looking at as, well, where's my cut? If you're writing everything, producing everything, performing everything, where am I going to make my money off of you? And then when I was signed to the indie label, it was like he wanted to get some kind of writing with me or something done. It was really a strange situation that I was experiencing. So I ended up, another thing you end up finding out are these contracts are another language.
Dude, that's the one thing that I'm so curious about when it comes to music, like music artists and stuff, like watching just a little bit of the into the industry that like the Straight Outta Compton, that movie, how they kind of portray what happened to them with their contracts and stuff. I'm like, that's really the first time I was like, oh, I guess people really do take advantage of artists this way. And you've seen enough contracts to know like, do they make it intentionally difficult or, you know, confusing? Or
it sure feels that way, Steven.
You're like, I don't know for sure, but it feels like that might be the case.
But you know what though, if you went to school and you're a lawyer and you understand the language, everyone has their own language, and you know the law is its own language. You know, to say man, I really love your Garfield shirt. Dude, it's like 3 sentences and the words all sound crazy. Like you're like, you're just saying that. So imagine me just saying that one phrase and it's 500 pages. You know, I have to trust this guy at the indie label, like, hey man, you know, the lawyers looked at it, it looks good. And you know, I'm not getting an advance or anything. It's an indie label. So by Hofega is, okay, well, what does it look like? So then you find out, and this is a while ago, so you start looking up lawyers to look at it. You start finding out it's going to take about $500 an hour for the average lawyer to look at this. Don't have fucking $500. My parents don't have $500 an hour to give to a lawyer to look over 500 pages of a contract. Luckily, when you are talented, though, people will look out for you and try to help you out a little bit. So I was in touch with this woman that looked over the contract and was like, it's pretty good. And she kind of taught me to look for the loopholes, because basically there was a time limit that I had on a label before I could just leave because my project wasn't done yet. And this is during a time when streaming is getting pretty popular. So I'm trying to explain to the label that people are getting songs out in a matter of weeks. People aren't spending 6 months on one song. Yeah. Like, you know, and but I did learn a lot from that situation, because he said one thing when I was trying to figure out my name, and he goes, think about the Beatles. He was like, they made the Beatles cool, but when you hear the Beatles, it doesn't sound cool. He's like, you have to make people want to play for you. And that always stuck with me, but I had to leave him because it was a dead end. But then I got with some interns that he had at his label that was starting a production company. And this was the first time when my first project, my first first creative project, I sent you Fireworks in Japan to listen to, which is what I consider my first album. My real first album is an EP called Please to Meet Me, where I recorded everything on my own beats. And then when they sent it back to me, it was an electro pop album. Now, not that I'm against the electro pop album. Right. You understand, if I knew you were going to do that, the performances on these songs are going to sound completely different. But then I'm dealing with these guys who are a little arrogant, and they're like, well, we see you as an employee. So you shouldn't have say in this. They wanted
like, to. You're like, dude, it's my art. Like, you're making money off my art, man. What are you talking about?
Before any money's made, we're having these conversations, which is crazy to me. Yeah. And they wanted to come back with a split that was like 60-40. I said, dude, if you did that and we went to court, my whole production's still in the project, dude. I'm like, we're going to do this fair 50-50. Like, and I learned a little bit of that. Like, that's where I get a little bit of my business stuff from, is those two situations, because it happened to me so young. But yeah. Also, because it happened to me so young, I just wanted to be independent. I never wanted to deal with being locked down to a label, not being able to do what I wanted to do because of greed. And for a little bit, I wasn't happy doing music, because it's like, is this what it's like? But just a couple months later, I found my groove again and was like, okay, I'm just going to do this independently. And I have. It's the long route, and it's a long road, and it's a less road take, the you know, but.
Road less traveled by.
Yes. But, you know. Thank you. But I'd rather do it this way, dude, because I do believe in like destiny, and I believe in people being here for a reason. And I just know having these gifts, I don't take it for granted. I don't take them lightly. And I just know in some way they're going to be of use. So if it's the long road, it's a long road, man. But I hope that answers the question a little bit. Did I answer both for you?
You probably did. Yeah, I think you did. You walked us through like your entire history. So I think that was good enough. It's interesting that you're very confident in your talents and your abilities. You've mentioned it a couple times. You're not shy about admitting that you have certain talents. And I think that that's interesting, and that's key for people to lean into what they know they're already gifted at in some way, right? And you've done that kind of in a great way here with art, and you've figured out how you want to act, how you want to make movies, how you want to make music. And I think that's really cool. Were you always understanding that I'm a talented dude? And of course, not in a cocky way, but leaning into what your talents are and then making them better. Have you always kind of known that about yourself?
I've just always focused on the work and trying to be better at the work. I look at a lot of people and I'm always just like, damn, they're just outworking me. I need to be better. A lot of, I get really awkward with compliments. So I really, to me, it just adds a little bit more pressure. But it's, I mean, talent is only as good as you make it. Like the gift always needs work. So I don't get caught up in all the titles. I just know that this makes me feel a certain way. And when I do it, people react, and they, not that they're reacting, but that they feel something. And they feel not an attachment, but they feel like someone speaking their language, like someone understands, someone feels the way they feel. And they might not have been able to articulate it before, but because they heard a line in the song, that got somewhere they needed to go. That's the best feeling in the world. And I guess if you say when you realize you were talented, I just realized that what I was doing was meaningful, because people would say, hey, keep going, because that song got me through this. Or damn, when you said that, it made me think about this. And those are the moments that you look for, even when you're on stage or if you're doing a film and people are looking at it and they have an emotional reaction to it, because that means it's speaking to something that's true. And that means that what you're doing is relatable. And I hope that answered your question.
No, absolutely, man. And I really like to just point that out, because that can help somebody. That's a great response, because that's a great way for somebody who wants to be great or wants to think of themselves as good at what they want to be good at, right? Like maybe somebody wants to be a poet and they just think they suck. Well, you just gave them like a great kind of way to stop worrying about that. Focus on the work, focus on being the best you can be, focus on what you see people respond to, you know, just being better. And ultimately that'll improve you. I think that's great advice and a great way to hone your skill to ultimately lead to the life that you want.
Yeah, man. It's the person. Everyone is so unique in their own ways. And I love to be able to create an art so much, because you can express who you are through these things. And there's healing in that as well. And art can come in all different forms. And that's the beautiful thing about art, and that it creates a community as well for you to feel accepted in your true self. And I believe that's what art really does. And that's what creatives do. And it could feel like a burden, I'm sure, for sometimes, but the reward is always worth it.
Absolutely. Just think of where we would be as a society, as people, without art. Think of anything you enjoy doing. It's art. It's watching movies. It's listening to music. It's writing poetry. It's creating something. It's, you know, basically anything that'll give you happiness can be art in some way. And I think that to lean into as an artist, as a pure blooded artist, right? Like you have to create, you have to affect people, or else you just can't breathe and eat correctly, right? Like you have to do it, right?
Yeah, every day. My wife, she's the one that is you literally work on your craft every day. And when you're by yourself, sometimes you don't really realize that, because it's just so a part of who you are. And it's like, I even if I try to take a break, I can only stay away for about a week. It's like a positive addiction, but it's great, because I'm just creating every day of my life. And that's just the kind of life that I want to live. That's the kind of life that makes me happy.
And that's great that you've found that. You've honed it, and it's become your singular focus. That's the stuff I'm trying to pull, man. Like making what's important to you, what are your values, and what are your gifts and goals, and then laser focusing on those, right? And making them pretty much all that you're about. Like trim away the fluff, right? Trim away the stuff that like is not going to get you where you want to be. And then even though it's tough and you're up all night making stuff, it doesn't feel like work. It feels amazing.
Exactly, dude.
Like we were filming our next sketch comedy thing with Sam. We were filming that for like 12 hours, like 2 weekends ago. Mm-hmm. And we were up till like 3 or 4 in the morning with one of them and with one of the days. And it's just like, yeah, this is what we're doing, man. We're trying to make people laugh. And so we're going to stay up all night, and we think we got a good one. So it's just like, it's really rewarding, even though the work can be really tiring.
That's the funny thing about creating an art, that it makes you feel like the possibilities are endless. And I don't know too many professions that make you feel that way. Just like, you're like, well, 3 to 4, that's fine. Anywhere else is like, well, you know, we don't really work past 5. But with art, you could be working at any time. You could be doing a shoot from any time to any time. It's just like all the rules are broken. and it's pretty great.
Because you're trying to get it done. You know what I mean? No one else is going to do it for you. That's what you realize. At some point, you realize no one's going to do this for me. I'm going to have to do it myself. And damn it, I worked all day. And now it's like 6 o'clock and we got to get going, but it's not going to get made unless we do this. So let's buckle in and let's go. And it's amazing. When you're done, it's so euphoric.
It really is, though.
What tell me about some of your short film projects, some of your, like, movies and stuff. Tell me about kind of what's been developed, something that people can look forward to, maybe if you have any plans for something in the future, because I know you're really leaning into film right now as well.
Yes. The outlet that I found through music has been film as well. And I've been acting all my life too. So it felt like the natural progression, especially being able to like kind of score some of my music into some of my films. The next one that should be out shortly, I want to submit it for the film festival circuit, will be Selfies, which your wife Amanda is in. I'm excited about that one. Be working on the podcast. And then my buddies back home, I believe their production company is called 402 Productions. They have a film that's winning a couple of awards right now at some film festivals called The Andy Baker Tape. And before that started to go off, Brett Lotta, he's one of the owners running a production company with Dustin. He like was like, hey, we need to work on something sooner or later, whether it's music or a film. So I just pitched them an idea that they really loved. So I'm working on a script for that to hopefully film sometime in the fall. And then I have 2 scripts in development right now too, that I'm just looking at logistically how to film since we're kind of opening back up here. And just seeing how that goes, because this was one that I wanted to film back in 2020. And I'm excited about it. I'm trying to just dabble in a bunch of different genres and get my skill set together before I tackle a feature film.
That's the way you do it, man. That's cool. So you not only write, direct, act, score your own stuff. It's pretty dope.
Yeah, and it's all... a lot of that comes from my skill set with music, and I just bled some of that over. So it's not as extraordinary as it might sound. I still a lot for me to learn, but it's great because I have all these skills, but I wouldn't say I'm a master of any of them, but at least I know exactly what I'm looking for. So when I am in a room with someone who has mastered that skill because they've gone to school for it and everything, I know a little bit how to talk and I can understand a little bit of their language. And then that creates, you know, just this community. A lot of this community teamwork feel I like in my projects comes from my theater background, because that's such a community. You learn how to mess with the lights, you learn how to do costumes, you learn how to do makeup, and you understand how every part is integral to the, I can't speak, man.
Integral.
to the whole process and the final product. So I'm a believer of, you know, kind of finding out, hey, what's the light guy doing over there? What's the cinematographer? How's he getting these shots? How's the sound work? I'm just interested in all of that stuff. And it helps with, you know, scouting talent on these projects.
You know, the old saying, a jack of all trades, but a master of none.
Yes.
Yeah. But the second half of that quote, though, is very much you. It's a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
Oh, I didn't realize that's the last.
To
the
There's a second part. Path to that. Yeah, dude. So just like Bars. You dabble in a bunch of stuff. And so be proud of that. That's better than only knowing, you know, music, right?
Yeah, I guess looking at it like that is a very positive outlook. I love that.
There you go. Take that with you, man. Write that. You know what? Write that in one of your songs, right?
Oh,
and then we'll know it's from this podcast. Oh, so filming, writing, directing. Dude, do you do anything else? Do you have any like recreational activities, man?
Like can you turn the fan on? I'm sorry. what recreational? Man, I like to play chess.
Dude, let's play. Hold on. Are you on that app? Hold on. Are you
which
on
which app? Because
chess I just, time. Are you on chess time?
I think I am. I think
it's I'm a little interested. it's the blue or I'm sorry, it's the green knight. It's the icon for it.
You know, I have
a guy that I keep playing, it's like takes like 4 days to make a move.
I do have chess time.
Dude.
That's what I
have. Yeah. All right, we're gonna
hell yeah. Oh yeah, man. I love chess, dude. That's probably that. And watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians with my wife.
did you watch The Queen's Gambit though?
I watched a couple of episodes of it. I have not finished it yet, and I loved every second of watching it though. I think I watched maybe two episodes and I was like, this is so good. And I was in the middle of doing something. I was like, this deserves all of my time.
Dude, it did not need to go that hard. It did not need to be as good as it was. Like the cinematography, the acting is insane, like the storytelling, and it's like crazy. I don't know the exact number, but the writer or the direct, I think it's the writer, has been like trying for years to get this off the ground. Like, nobody wanted a movie about a chess girl. And so he turned it into a show and it knocked it out of the fucking park, dude. It's so good.
I think that's what's so great about these streaming platforms. It's allowing artists to tell stories in different realms. And we're finding that, you know, a 6-episode series is much better than a 2-hour movie sometimes. And it's like so great for all the creatives to be able to dive in into the worlds and the characters. It's like just exciting as shit to especially see so many. It took so many years to get that developed. Now it's his passion project. And look, hey, it took years, but damn it, when it came, bro. And it hit hard, dude. I love that.
Yeah. And that's a really good example again of luck favors the prepared in a way. Like, there's no overnight success. You know, that worked for years and years and years and years, and then all of a sudden you have an overnight success, right? So keep that in the back of your mind. Write also, you know, bars, write that in your next song as well. I'm going to send you a bunch of quotes of just stuff that I've said, and then you're going to put that in your next song, right? Cool. It's
so true. We were talking about that earlier this week, and I've seen people not be prepared for that look. They get that look, and something might be going viral, but they don't have anything else. They're not actually prepared. And I hate seeing it. It's the worst thing because you just don't know when that moment will present itself. And it's so important to be prepared. It's so important.
And to believe and have some hope that, okay, my time is coming. Whatever it is, if it's a promotion, if it's going viral with something, if it's having somebody important look at your script, whatever, it's like those moments, just got to hold on to it, man.
Yeah, because it's coming. You just got to keep working. Keep run your race.
Right.
Run your race, dude. Just run your race.
Stop comparing your race to other people. That's something that I deal with. I look at other people that are either my age or were at a certain part in life that I was maybe like 5 years ago or whatever. And I'm like, dang it, what am I doing wrong? Or what are they doing? Or how am I? And then I have to knock that off and be like, no, dude, I'm doing my own thing. And it's unique to me and it's cool and it's different and I'm loving it. And once you're reminded of that, it's like, no one else is running this race but me. And it's pretty dope, you know?
Exactly. Because everyone's journey is different. And it's just motivation, dude. I always say, like, if I, like, see, like, The Weeknd performing, I'm like, ooh, I hate him. I'm like, I'll say, like, I hate on that person. But I'm just like, it's because I love them so much. So it's like you try to turn these negatives into a positive. It's like when you really know what the actually true feeling and emotion that you get when you watch your peers go somewhere, because we all support our peers. We all want our peers to win, but we start to, you know, compare their success to our success and it all gets diluted. And then, but you just have to run your race, man. That's it.
And be grateful and happy for others when their moment comes before you.
Exactly, dude. Because all it says is like, yo, it can happen. It always bothers me when people just hate on each other, because it's just like, why? You if you can't be happy for someone's success, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. Don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to say to that. Same thing, dude. It's like, we don't have to be best friends, but if you're going to, why are you going to actively be against or be upset at my, whatever my success is, right? And that's such a waste of energy, bro. Just be like supportive or ignore me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
or ignore me.
Like, I don't give a shit, but you don't got to say anything about it. God, like stick
such to your... Such a waste of energy. It's such a waste of energy.
And usually the ones not doing anything. Usually the ones ignoring their calling or ignoring their work or their race. Unfortunately, you know?
Yeah. When you said that, I'm like, damn, you're right. Damn.
I'm sorry, bars? Is that what I'm saying?
That was a bar. Write that down.
Oh my, this is just like my way. I'm trying to sneak into your music. It's so funny, dude. Do you have, has anybody ever tried to do that? Like legit? Like for real? Almost be like, hey, like I got an idea for a song. Like, do you just provide a beat for me? And or like not collaborative, more like, hey man, let me in on this.
I don't allow myself in those situations anymore. Earlier on, it was like that a little bit, but I just don't allow myself into those situations unless it's a collaborative setting we're going to be in. I just don't even allow myself in that situation. Like a lot of people are like, well, do you have any beats that are lying around or do you have any beats I can use? Like I can send you beats, but they're tailor-made for me and I'm just not using them. And that's why I used to hate to call myself a producer because I'm like, I'm not really, unless I'm, like there's an artist that we're filming a video for on Saturday that I really enjoy her music. So I'm like, I'd bend some rules for that. I'm like, you know, because I see her grind and her hunger and I see where her talent is. And I'm just like, yo, if I can help you in anywhere, I will definitely help you. Because she plays on the guitar and she sings like no one's business. And I'm just like, if you need some instrumentation, I would help there. But I'm not usually that person because at the end of the day, I'm a music artist and I know the kind of attention that I needed when I was an artist growing in the industry. And I wouldn't want to not give my all to someone. So yeah, but I don't even know if I really answered your question.
No, it's fine, man. Yeah. We're just chatting now. It doesn't really matter. But I mean, I understand that spirit of like generosity to those who are hungry and to like, it's like looking behind you and bringing people with you, but also you're not a charity, you're not a handout of ideas or beats or information, whatever, you know? So you got to find the people who, you know, are passionate and, you know, you feel led to want to help out. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, because like in this industry, people keep certain, a lot of information secretive. And that's one thing I don't really like. I'm getting used to social media and a lot of people are these gurus and they have all this information to give you. But at the end of their video, they want you to sign up for something. And I'm like, I know we all have to eat, but how genuine is that? Because there's certain things that I see people say about the music industry, and I know that's not true. I know some of your playlists are bogus, and you're just preying on artists. So what makes you different from the big corporations that are doing this to artists? You're just doing it on social media, and you're gaining a big following, and you're getting money. That's one reason why I know you were talking about approaching social media earlier. And like, I've been trying to figure out how to approach it in the most genuine, authentic way. Because I don't want to be a character on social media. Like, nothing about it moves me. Nothing about it attracts me. Because perception, and things that we perpetrate right now, for the younger generation, just our peers and just ourselves, period. It's so much pressure, dude. I just even think about in high school before social media, I think we're kind of close in age. So we kind of got to see when technology kind of really made its presence be known, that transition. And I think that's what's unique about a generation. And it's important to see that because without it, I think people had really tough times in school and tough times with their identity and tough times with their parents. And now it's so amplified. I couldn't imagine what the youth goes through. And yeah, social media is a really, really interesting place.
I have so many thoughts about social media and young people and is it good? Is it bad? I think that the kids, we adapt. So we adapted to starting, you know, with no technology and then the first iPhone was made when we were like prime age, right? So it's yeah. like, So, but the kids that grow up with all the technology, it's like, well, that's what they know. There's no, it's not any worse or better. Like they would get eaten alive in the 90s just because they wouldn't know how to handle the, like the real life situation of that, just because it's different, you know? Yeah. So it's like, then maybe 90s version of us are, you know, not that young, but like early 2000s of us wouldn't survive in a high school today. I don't know. It's just different, man. It's too different to really compare. And I think that's what each generation does, as they look back and on the one before them, and they're like, or the one after them, excuse me. And they're like, you guys, blah, 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 have it so easy, or don't have to do this. And it's been happening every generation forever, dude. Our parents did it to us, their parents did it to them. So it is what it is.
Yeah, the part that I worry about is the psychological effect. That's the only thing that scares me, when kids are seeing things on social media and it's making them want to commit suicide or certain things like that. Like that's what scares me about social media. But like you said, it's just different. It's just, it happens with every generation, but it's just different because the times change.
I would argue there's an equal amount of things that would motivate kids and want to make them feel better about themselves and to want to be successful. So there is a dark part of things that, you know, it's kind of balanced too. So it's, but it would be just like real life, you know, even back, let's say if you were in high school in the 90s, like you're going to have the stuff that makes you want to, you know, have bad days. And you're also going to have the really good stuff. What do you listen to? You know, who do you feed? Which voice in your head do you go with? Whatever. But I mean, it is amplified now. I think social media is amplified attitudes and people. So it's like anybody who would be a genuine good person, that would be amplified. Anybody who might be a bad person, that would be amplified, right?
And that's why I do love social media when I come to the end of that journey and that conversation, because it's such a community and you can reach out and touch people so quickly than you could before. So just like you said, you can choose to look at the bad, but there's a lot of good in it. And just the fact that we can just pick up the phone and be and see each other or do this right now, it creates so much room for communication. And that's what's making me get into social media, because I'm like, I see it. I see the good in it and how we can just communicate more with each other, get to understand each other, and to experience new things with each other. It's really cool.
Yeah. Have you, I think about that a lot, and about the interconnectedness, especially the last year, 2020, how miserable would that be if we didn't have a lot of this technology? You know what I'm saying? Everyone locked in their homes, right? So I don't know. I choose that. And even through COVID, I've tried to always look, you know, as best that I can, you know, I look on the bright side of things, it's different. That's a very like naive way to say it, but it's more like choosing to look for and choosing to believe in the things that are positive and good and actually good. But anyways, I digress on that. But I was going to ask you, have you seen these songs that like go viral on TikTok, specifically like made by artists on TikTok, like not Katy Perry that just had a song that blew up or something, but artists are going viral now on TikTok because they just have dope songs.
I know, which I have a friend back home that he's always sending me the type of TikTok videos I need to be doing. He's like, when you start doing this, is what you need to do, dude. I know you can do this. I know this will blow up. I'm like, dude, but it's such a refocus. And like, whatever I do, I like to give my full attention to. So we're in the middle of the production on the podcast. So once that kind of starts to die down, and while we're doing it, I'm going to start focusing on social media, because once I start doing it, I really want to give my all to it and understand what makes it work and understand why everyone's so excited about it too, because for so long I've been like, nah. So I'm like, I'm really excited about it because of people connecting. And like you said, people are getting deals off of TikTok and people are being so creative. It's such a creative atmosphere to be involved in and to just do it from your phone.
It's gnarly, dude. That's cool. You've brought up this podcast now like three times, so I want to get an idea. But can you give people a teaser as to what you guys are working on and what it might be called? Are you allowed to say anything right now?
Yeah. So it's my wife's podcast, Jess. It's called The Really Low Podcast in the Evolving World of Jess with our co-host Jasmine. They're touching on a lot of different issues. A lot of self-help and healing and conversations that necessarily wouldn't be common to have. And they create this really safe place to have these conversations. And I know they're gonna have some guests on, and it's been great just watching them. Jess has been working on this for about 2 years and a half. And that's another thing I'd like for people to see is that even with you, with For the Love Of, it starts as like a concept in your head. And then you actually start having to do the work. Well, what do I need to do this? What do I need to accomplish this? Well, what would my show be like? What's my voice? What do I want to say to people? What kind of platform do I want to have? And it's been really cool to watch someone do that. And then it comes to fruition the way it has. And I think the first episodes are going to start premiering in May. So, yeah.
How many episodes have you guys already recorded a bunch?
Just one. She's doing a really cool thing, I guess I can say. It's going to be series. So she's doing eight episode series, and then she's going to take a break. And I think the next season will start production sometime in the summer.
That's cool. That's popular. It's a cool way to do it. I think it also generates a lot of excitement. So when you're done and people are like ready for the next one, and then when you drop it again, you'll probably see a spike in listeners at that point. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited, dude. I'm excited for, and I'm excited for people to hear it and see it.
Do you have a name? Can a name nail down yet or no?
Oh, the Really Low Podcast.
You said that. That's on me. The Really, hold on, listen. The Really Low Podcast.
The Really Though. Like, really though? Really though?
Oh, okay. Really, so though? I'm glad I asked.
Really though?
That. Like, really though?
In the evolving world of Jess. With Jasmine. That's how I would do it. She probably wouldn't.
You should be her MC. Ladies and gentlemen, in the red corner. Anytime I think of an announcer, I think of the little mouse from Space Jam that announces all the players and stuff. Dude, an actual announcer. I don't know his name. That played him. There was an actual announcer that did it.
That Space Jam 2 trailer looks so good.
Bro. I did not know I was going to be that excited. I was like, it's going to be okay. Oh my God. I cannot. I told Amanda, we're going to the theaters to watch this. I don't care if it's streaming on HBO. We're going to pay money to go see this on the big screen.
It looks so good. I was like, this has no business looking this good. They have Don Cheadle in it. I'm like, and then they start having all the what is it? Warner Brothers. So they have all the, I'm like, are you kidding me? This is great.
And I like that it starts with the old animation, and then it looks like it's going to be like moving into like more of the animation we see now. Oh my God, dude. And LeBron James can actually act. He's pretty good. I think he's talented.
Yeah, so do I. I'm excited to see what he does. And the same way I was excited to see what Kobe was going to do when he retired is like my excitement for LeBron and him being great. Same way I feel like about The Rock. All of these people that we've seen grow, like I'm just like, I love whenever they have a new venture, a new business deal.
Dude, I'm a sucker for anything The Rock wants to sell, I'm gonna buy. It could be a pile of shit. And he's like, hey guys, this is my own shit, $3 million. I'm like, babe, how do we get a loan? I need this pile of shit right here. It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson's.
Oh my goodness, he is just so great. He's just so great. You're right. Anything he's selling, I'm buying.
Ryan Reynolds, I'll buy. Do aviation gin? Come on, pour it down my throat. Let's go, buddy. Like, of course.
That was such a brilliant deal that he closed with that too. I love all those guys, dude.
Yeah, when they can use their platform to do other like actual business ventures is really cool. Or run nonprofits. There's a lot of actors and actresses that do that. Like, super dope, man. That's I can get behind that, man. And like making a vodka, like. Of course, Boost Mobile, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds has like a phone company. What the hell is that?
I was like, where did that come from? And then The Rock on Instagram, just when he makes his tequila drink and he has his Sunday cheat day, I'm just like, I love your life. I love your life, bro. I love everything you're doing.
Yes. Oh, 100%. Mint Mobile. I'm sorry. People are going to be like yelling at me. Mint Mobile is his, it's like 15 bucks a month or some shit. This isn't an ad for them. It's just like, that's just what he's doing right now. And Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston, they have their own tequila too. Dos Hombres. Oh, hey, dude, I'll drink theirs.
I didn't know that.
Hell yeah, dude. Dos Hombres.
Dude, that's awesome. We just, she watched for the first time. I rewatched Breaking Bad like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
Still really good. Still really good.
One of the best ever, dude. I have you seen The Sopranos? Did you ever watch that?
Yes, definitely. Okay. I'm from Jersey.
Okay, there you go. There you go. I put those two together, but I think I enjoyed Breaking Bad a lot more. But I love the freaking Sopranos, dude. That was such a good show. It's just we literally took like a year break in between some seasons. It's it's dense. It's really, really dense. And you kind of, I don't know. It's not something that you can easily binge, in my opinion. So we had to wait some time. But the Breaking Bad, binge that, no problem.
See, Breaking Bad does start off really slow. And then I feel like the Sopranos, the last season, there's a couple of episodes that they could have done without. I think the whole him in a coma thing, I think, is something happening like that. But they could have done a lot without a lot of those episodes.
The last season was, instead of 13, it was like 26 episodes.
Exactly.
So there was like a whole first season that was like a regular season, and then there was like a finale season or whatever.
Yeah, and I hate when they do that. Sometimes these shows don't know how to end well, which is always unfortunate for the fans.
Yeah, like Game of Thrones, man. Don't even get me started.
Exactly the one I was thinking about, dude. So disappointing. And then I just watched the last episode of Shameless and I was like,
I saw you post about that.
Dude, just no. You get invested in these characters and you really just feel like, but you're like, you know, it's funny to be on that end of the stick sometimes. And then you're trying to create your own things and you're like, hey, someone might feel this way about something I create one day. Go a little easy on them.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, man. That is actually a really good point. Like, if you're an artist and you're creating anything, go a little bit easy on the people that are creating around you, because as mad as I got about the end of the Game of Thrones, and it really is just the writing, because everything else is perfect. It's just the writing.
Yep.
They still did it, man. They still made a bajillion dollars. So, I mean, who am I to say?
Still very entertaining. And we feel, that's the whole point. We feel so passionately about it though. And they evoked that feeling out of us. Through all those years that they had that show and all the seasons, we got so invested in each character. When every character that died, every surprising death, we're still hanging on the edge of our seat. And they evoked that out of us. The fear that we had about the wall and all that stuff. I mean, you gotta appreciate it. You know, can't let one season kill all of that.
It's really just one episode two episodes, really, because the beginning is pretty strong. So, you know.
Yeah, you're right. It was really just two. But see, that's so funny because you finally said it's really only two episodes, but it feels like it's the whole season. And we were riding that entire. We were like, yes. But those two episodes, where does it start falling off? It falls off right after the fight. I feel like.
I think the first. Wasn't there like only six episodes or something?
Yeah. So it's like the third or fourth episode when they actually have the fight and it was like dark as shit and you couldn't see anything for real.
Yeah.
When you're like,
and there's a lot of bad decisions made. Yeah. Like, why wasn't John the one that fought the Ice King? Why wasn't it was his whole fucking destiny? What the hell, bro? Anyways.
Yeah. Sorry.
I digress. I'm going to get angry. That's what I'm passionate about. Here we go. Round two. Talk about the end of Game of Thrones and what they should have changed. That's why those guys lost that Star Wars deal too, I think.
Yeah, it seemed like
Benioff and Wise.
Yeah, they were playing some kind of deal because they were trying to leave HBO and they were saying they were getting a Star Wars deal. So they cut the season in half or something like that. It was something weird. That's what they were
Star Wars. And then they lost that.
So I'm like, yeah, you rushed that to go be a part of this project and you probably could have gave a little bit more love to your baby. But like I said, what happens if we're in those shoes and you get to do Star Wars? I feel like you might be like, I mean, we did Game of Thrones, it's great. Can we end it like this? Okay, I'm going to do Star Wars too. Game of Thrones and Star Wars. I mean.
You know what? That bars, put that in your next song. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a good point. You do have a good point. I mean, like, what would any of us have done in that position if we thought we had a good story? You know what I'm saying? So. Hey, and they spent 2 years on it producing it. It looks amazing. So, hey, they did something good.
You know.
I have an artistic question for you as well about the naming of your bands.
Yes.
And why you have, I guess, multiple bands and multiple names. What's the idea behind that?
So, when you wear so many hats, it becomes a thing of identity and just being able to identify who you are in certain situations. So through healing and healing through art, for me, I've been able to find like, and just look back on things. I was able to find that during a certain period of time, I was learning how to produce during a certain period of time, I was learning really how to sing and rap. And so I've created, during those times, I had different names. When I first started, I was going by my middle name and the first initial of my first name, Rashad J. So I've always, it's just always been a play on my own name. And then it went from that to like Jay Shure. And then from Jay Shure, I got Molly and the Pineapples. And that's really, Molly and the Pineapples just came about because I was scrolling on Instagram and it asked, what was the last drug you did and the last fruit you ate? And I thought Molly and the Pineapples sound great. So that's where that came from. But also it's a house for the producer part of me, who is Rashad J, the performer part of me, who's Jay Shuler. And then Molly and the Pineapples just creates all of that. There's another ego in there somewhere too, but I think he's really wrapped up in Jay Shuler. So it's to me, it works for my brain, having all of these different hats I'm wearing to separate these identities. Like I just finally made a Jerome Shuler director, an actor page on Instagram. So it's like, I have everything going through my music stuff. And sometimes you can be too involved in your art, not to realize the other aspects of it. And just for business, why it's good to have all these different pages. So within doing that and looking into social media, I've been more like, all right, this is who this person is. This is who this person is. So I was performing under Jay Shuler and now I'm performing under Molly and the Pineapples, but I like to be able to go back and forth because I feel like a little bit with Jay Shuler, I rap a little bit more under Jay Shuler and the music might sound a little different than what I want to do with Molly and the Pineapples. And I know it might be confusing for, fans, I hate calling it fans, like supporters, to follow along sometimes. But I think it's really cool and a fun thing to play with because it's like, well, who are you? It's like, well, I am Jay Shuler. Well, who are you? I'm also Rashad J. And it's like, yeah, but I don't get it. But do you get it? You probably do get it, but you get what I'm saying.
No, yeah, I totally get it. I thought it was, I mean, I had kind of the same idea. Like, I wonder why he's doing this. Might be for marketing purposes or trying to make it seem like, because in like your videos and stuff, it's usually three different people as Molly and Pineapples, right? So it's like, okay, those are different versions of himself and they're all playing together in harmony. Pretty cool. All right. That's cool. I like that. I didn't know the origin of the name though. That was pretty dope.
Yeah. It was just so funny because Childish Gambino got his name like that, doing it in like a Wu-Tang generator.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that is so cool. I thought that was so cool, but so random. And I'm like, but who gets such a cool name like that in one of those generators? And I was just scrolling one night and it was like, last drug and your last fruit. And I was like, that sounds great. Molly and the Pineapples. And no one ever knows who it is because you hear Molly, you feel like there's going to be a woman front lead singer. So you never really know what it is. So it intrigues you a little bit too. And yeah.
A little mysterious.
Yeah, so it wasn't something that took a lot of thought.
Well, you know, I mean, none of these bands do. What's the old Hoobastank story?
Oh, goodness, Hoobastank.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, someone just farted, and they're like, who bought Stank? And they just made it into a band. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I was told.
I was like, is that a true story?
Hoobastank name origin. Let's see. They recruited my Hoobastank interview. Rob's mispronounced. Oh, apparently there's a German street name that was named something and he would mispronounce it as Hoobastank. Dang it. My version is much better. We're going to go with that. They were all just hanging around one day and someone farted and like, Hoobastank. That's it. That's the peak of my comedy right there. I'm a child.
I'm not way too funny though.
Hoobastank. I mean, you were a 12-year-old. Dude, I'm running out of questions for you, man. We're just vibing here now. Walk me through all those pictures on your wall. Go like one at a time.
Oh,
I'm kidding. Don't do that. I see MJ in the back, though. Just chilling on his elbow.
You got some MJ over there. That's what the Thriller album. And that's just a bunch of artists. It's some... fashion designers, whatever. Like, I like this wall because when you look, all these talented creatives are just looking at you. And I like that feeling because that's the pressure that I like to feel, like before you get on stage and you have the butterflies. That's like, that's what I like. I like being in a rut and then being able to look at them and they look at me and be like, we're doing it. Take inspiration from me. I love that.
Join us. Join us in the realm of greatness.
So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I like this.
Well, Mr. Jay Schuler, Mr. Molly and the Pineapples, Mr. Jerome, did I say miss?
God. You did, and I'm.
No. I'm going to edit that out. That's terrible. Because I was trying to say Mr. I just missed the last ter. What's what?
It's tears.
Oh, God. Spare me, man. Oh, no, but hey. Mr. Molly and the Pineapples, Mr. Jay Schuler, Mr. Jerome, thanks for hopping on, man. Now tell the people where they can find you, what they can do to like support you, what platforms are you on? Give us the spiel, man.
I'm on everything. You can go on the YouTubes. You can search Molly and the Pineapples. Madeline Ave Productions is my production company that I have with my wife and our associate Jasmine. You can search those things, search Jay Schuler. I'll pop right on up. Oh, mollyandthepineapples.com too. Yeah, mollyandthepineapples.com, madelineappproductions.com, just all the .coms.
What about like Instagram? Are you on that app? Have you
Instagram at Molly and the Pineapples, at Jerome R. Schuler Jr., and I will follow back, and I will like your things, and I will comment when I'm on social media.
Can confirm you have liked a couple of our stuff here in the podcast. So guys, he's not a liar. I promise you. He will like and he will comment and he will subscribe and you will love him for it.
Yes.
Well, guys, thank you for listening. Guys, gals, ladies, men, human beings, whatever you identify as. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying this time that I've had with Jerome. For those who want to find this podcast on Instagram, you can look up at For the Love of the Podcast. Obviously, you're listening to this because you're on either Spotify or Apple or Breaker or Google, but share this with a friend or the family member who may have been inspired by anything Jerome said, any kind of insight he had. Just share this with somebody who you think will benefit from it. That's all I ask. And I hope that you guys have a great time. I love you. And we'll see you on the next one.